Shalom, this is Billy Brim and the Voice of One Witness radio broadcast. I'm reading to you from a little book that came into my hands, The New York City Noon Prayer Meeting. This book was written in 1858. A prayer meeting was started in New York City, September 23rd, 1857. They're writing a report 1 year later on what all had transpired. They don't even know yet when this book was written by Talbot Dubber Chambers. They don't even know that this is going to be called the Fourth Great Awakening and that it would spread all up and down the seaboard. And it would even go into the South, into the Confederate soldiers. They did not know, have any way of knowing when this book was written, that of the 30 million people in the United States of America, 2 million would be born again because one man, Jeremiah Lampier, heard the Lord to begin a prayer meeting in a church on Fulton Street in New York City. Now, I have read about that prayer meeting, and I know about its great results in the book that I read, Revival Fire, by Wesley Duell. We know now, looking back, what happened. But the book that I hold in my hand is so interesting because they saw something was happening, yet it's only 1 year after it began to happen. Jeremiah Lampier, there's a church that was an old church in New York City. It had been built there by the Dutch that had come to settle New York, and they had built it in 1767. And they were in the part of New York City that was growing. Their families were there. They built a lovely church, and they worshiped God. But then New York City began to grow rapidly, and in 100 years, the people, it was no longer a residence, place of residence, but it was the business center of New York City, and the church still stood there. However, it had no congregants. Nobody came. Still had a board. And the board decided, we're going to hire someone and see if, because there's millions of people, I don't know millions, but a lot of people were around there, thousands at least, and let's use this church, invite them to this church. So they hired a man, a businessman, Jeremiah Lampier. But he was a man of prayer. He was a man who had come to the Lord during Finney's revival. So he went about it systematically to make the church grow. He went visiting people and inviting them in. And it was in the business district, so he got a congregation mostly of men. The work was hard. He would be discouraged. But he knew, he had the good sense to know that when he was discouraged, when he went out working so hard, the thing to do was come back and pray. He was a man of prayer. And so he would lie before the Lord, and he experienced such answer to prayer that the thought came to him, I'm quite sure it came from the Holy Spirit, if it helps me this much, it would help these businessmen all around here, and street vendors and whatever they were at that time, and the buildings where the business were, it would help them. So he started a noon prayer meeting. The first day, he advertised that it would be Wednesdays. It would be from 12 to 1. You could come and spend the whole hour, or you could spend 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever you could. It started out the first day with him, just himself, for half an hour. Then came 6 men. Then Wednesday after Wednesday, and finally they changed it to every day because it increased so. It spread across the whole city, churches in every city, in the whole city, but yet the original prayer meeting was not diminished. It spread. They used a theater, and people lined up at the theater before they opened the doors, and the crowd was outside. They couldn't get them all in. They prayed in firehouses, and it spread to Philadelphia and all the principal cities. Soon after this, when I'm reading to you now from the little book, The New York City Noon Prayer Meetings, written in 1858 by Chambers. It wasn't long before noon prayer meetings had been constituted and were largely attended in all the principal cities. The custom was introduced of exchanging dispatches with each other by magnetic telegraph. They had magnetic telegraph. They didn't have what we have today. They didn't have the radio that I'm coming to you by. They didn't have the internet. But they had the magnetic telegraph. One of these, received from Philadelphia, is inserted as an illustration. And here it is. I'll read it to you. Philadelphia, Saturday, March 18. Now, this is March after the prayer meetings began in September. September, October, November, December, January, February, March. This is 6 months later with one noontime prayer meeting in New York City. To Mr. Wetmore and the Fulton Street meetings. Jane's Hall daily prayer meeting is crowded, upwards of 3,000 present. With one mind and heart, they glorify our Father in heaven for the mighty work he is doing in our city and country, in the building up of saints and the conversion of sinners. The Lord hath done great things for us, whence joy to us is brought. May he who holds the seven stars in his right hand and who walks in the midst of the churches be with you by his Spirit this day. Grace, mercy, and peace be with you. George H. Stewart, chairman of the meeting. As these things were going on and they were spreading so rapidly, they posted this in the original church. This daily prayer meeting from 12 to 1 o'clock, commenced September 23rd, 1857, is intended to be a permanent institution. Prayer is the Christian's vital breath, the Christian's native air, his watchword at the gates of death. He enters heaven with prayer. Him that cometh to me, I will in no wise cast out. This is a plaque that was placed in the Fulton Street Church, announcing it was to be a permanent institution. Had it remained so, there would not have been the Twin Towers tragedy, for this church was on the very grounds where the Twin Towers stood. As this meeting grew, and this little book, it has testimonies. It was printed only one year, after that prayer meeting began. It has testimonies that happened here and there in the first year. But when the book was written, they had no way of knowing how it was actually going to turn out. It actually spread up and down the eastern seaboard. Such a canopy of prayer was over it that ships at sea 100 miles out, the whole crew and the captain and passengers would be convicted of their sins and would wire back into America, "Send us a preacher." Bless the Lord. It spread down into the Civil War area and with the generals Lee and Stonewall Jackson. And it actually, I'm quite sure, it's called the Fourth Great Awakening, and I'm quite sure that it preserved our nation. In the exact same time, 1857, it happened in Northern Ireland. There came such an outburst, bless the Lord, of prayer in Northern Ireland. And it is written about in a book that was given to me called Ireland's Lost Heritage. But as they began a revival, the outpouring of the Spirit that came was so concentrated. I'm reading you from Ireland's Lost Heritage. When it hit Ulster, that's Northern Ireland, like a tidal wave, it carried everything in front of it. Such was the sheer force of the deluge that the clergy were unable to cope with the demands it put on them. And through dire necessity, laity were conscripted for the work of the ministry. Hence, lay preachers and women's ministries, and even to some degree children, did the work of evangelists. It came to characterize this 1859 outpouring in Northern Ireland. It was an awakening. A revival is said to be a visitation of God's Spirit upon His people. But an awakening affects the general society at large. And that's what happening in the awakening that started with a prayer meeting that met at noon in New York City. I've been thinking about Jesus' own prayer. In Jesus' own prayer, he taught others to pray in what the world calls the Lord's Prayer. His real prayer was chapter 17 of John. These words spake Jesus and lifted his eyes to heaven and said, "Father, the hour is come." Oh, folks, the hour is come. If you don't know with what's happening in America, what's happening with Russia, what's happening with Iran, and especially what's happening with Israel, that the hour has come, we've got to have an awakening. Jesus knew the hour has come. He said, "Glorify thy Son, that thy Son also may glorify thee." He prayed, "I have glorified thee on the earth," verse 4, "I finished the work you gave me to do. O Father, glorify these with thine own glory, with the glorify thou me with thine own glory, with the glory which I had with thee before the world was. And then he prays for those that he's leading here. And he prays, this is his prayer for them, verse 11. I am no more in the world, but these are in the world. I come to thee, Holy Father. Keep through thine own name those whom thou hast given me, that they may be one as we are one. He prays for the unity of his body. Now, we are one. The death, burial, and resurrection of the Lord Jesus Christ, he's the head, and we are the body. But then he prayed not only for those who are there, but he prayed for you and me. Verse 20, neither pray I for these alone, but for them also which shall believe on me through their word, that they all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, that they also may be one in us, and that the world may believe that you have sent me. He prayed that their unity would show, so that the world would believe that God sent Jesus. Not that their church splits and their schisms and their fights over doctrine would show, but that their unity would show. And the glory, verse 22, which you have given me, I have given them, that they may be one as we are one. I in them and thou in me, that they may be made perfect in one, that the world may know that thou hast sent me. That's what happened in every awakening. George Whitefield came and preached to the colonies that were all spread apart by the infrastructure not good. They had no sense of unity at all. They were the Virginians, they were the Tennesseans, they were the Carolinians. He went and rode by horseback until he literally died, preaching that we are all equal before God. And a unity grew. 4/5 of those early colonists were united in their beliefs, primarily by the preaching of George Whitefield. When the British fired in the Boston Massacre upon the colonists, he died just 6 months prior to that. And God had them ready for the United States of America to be born. In 1859, from that little prayer meeting that started on Wednesdays, it was a move of prayer. It is written in the book, Revival Fire. It was as if the church discovered their real power. The 1859 awakening was an awakening of prayer. It spread across the whole United States of America, primarily through prayer. Now we're praying at Prayer Mountain in the Ozarks. And we're joined every Wednesday by people joining us. We're streaming the prayer meeting. You can join us. Just join us at billybrim.org. That's BILLYEBRIM.ORG. Or pray wherever you are. Wherever you are right now, stop and ask God, please save America. Give us an awakening. Please help this world. Give us an awakening. He increased his presence in answer to unity. We are unified in our prayers. In answer to unified prayers, God gave awakenings, and he will give us one as we are united to pray for an outpouring that will save America. Shalom, shalom. This is Billy Brink.